everybody, let's check it out.
What's it all about?
Hey, everybody, let's rap.
That's right. We're here to talk to you about some difficult decisions that you're going to have to make in your young life.
That's right. We want to make sure you make decisions correctly.
Exactly.
Involving magic.
You are a developing magic player, and we understand that you're going to be presented with tough decisions.
You're going through a lot of changes right now.
There's a lot of peers out there who will peer pressure you into doing things that maybe you shouldn't do.
Like cracking packs instead of drafting them with your friends?
Exactly.
Just say no.
Just say no.
Remember.
Don't crack that booster.
Don't crack that booster. If somebody comes up to you with a nefarious kind of look about their face and they're like, here, why don't you try playing blue? Just say
Maria,
no. What?
Maybe they're like, hey, just play red. Just say no to just playing red.
Maybe they're like, hey, maybe you should play this game without sleeves. It feels so much better, baby.
You tell them no.
You tell them no.
Your cards need to be protected.
That's right.
It is dangerous out there.
What if you want to sell that card later on?
Exactly.
You don't want it to be dirty.
No, you really don't.
Mm-mm.
We're talking about actual cards.
Cards. That's right, we're just definitely not a metaphor for anything.
Nothing. Because we would never suggest that not sleeving your cards would make them dirty in a metaphor.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Magic the Amateuring, where we not only give you great magic life advice, we also give you real life advice, too.
Exactly.
Two for one. That's what a two for one is.
Congratulations. It's your first piece of knowledge.
Hey, everybody. I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm Megan.
And we've got a great show for you today.
Absolutely, we do. We're going to talk a little bit about planning out your turn.
That's right, as well as reading some questions from our mailbag and talking about some potential spoilers.
What? Spoilers?
Yeah, neither confirmed nor denied, Megan.
Spoiler alert. We don't know if these spoilers are real or false.
Spoiler alert.
We're going to spoil about them. Spoiler anyways.
Say spoiler one more time.
Spoiler.
Okay. Everybody, also something new about this show this week, as if you didn't want to just listen to our voices telling you this podcast, you can also see our faces telling you this podcast.
Absolutely, you can. Maybe you're listening to this in your typical, you know, how you've been used to listening to Magic the Amateuring. You're checking us out on Stitcher. You're listening to us on your iTunes feed. You're on our website, magictheamateuring.com. But you can also find the video starting on Friday on the Tolarian Community College YouTube channel.
Yeah, we'll be there. Our faces will be there. I mean, if that's something you want to look at, come on over.
Exactly. We are both wearing adjunct faculty blazers. You're going to have to come watch the video to know if that's a lie or not.
And we are recording in front of a giant peacock. Lie or not, come find out.
Who knows?
You will never know unless you come to Tolarian Community College and take a look. Our recent Magic the Prothering episode 1 is also up there featuring Eric Froelich.
Absolutely. It is pretty spectacular. You can learn so much about home and garden television, which you never knew.
Also, Eric's life as a pro poker player.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Super crazy.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean,
yeah.
Who knew? We also talk about payouts and magic as well.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting discussion. Check it out on Tolarian Community College's YouTube page. We got to this point being able to produce Magic the Prothering thanks to your donations on Patreon.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for making that happen.
If you want to join the club, just go to patreon.com/mtacast and throw a dollar or two our way. If you donate a dollar an episode, you get a sweet Magic the Amateuring sticker. If you donate more, the $5 level is t-shirts, and they're going to be ready soon.
And you guys, I've seen them, and they're great.
They're amazing.
They're spectacular.
I mean, we hope to also have them up for sale on our website, but guess what? You get one for free if you donate for $3 a month at three months at $5 an episode. And, well, that's probably more in the long run. It's less in, what am I trying to say?
It's more in our hearts
It's
as
more
well.
In our hearts, yeah. So just consider that. So yeah, a great show for you. And if you want to see us on video, Tolarian Community College, peace.
Looking at you.
We're looking at you, kids.
This is a pair of scissors. Hey, Maria.
Hey, what, Megan?
We were going to talk about something on For the Noobs. What we're going to talk about?
Planning your turn.
What's it all about?
So think about this, you guys. Are you going to go out for a night when you're just like having a good time? Anything might happen. Mm-hmm. You're like feeling good. You're wearing your, you know, high heel boots.
Yeah.
And are you just going to go into that without planning for your turn?
No, you're not. You're going to be prepared for any of the possibilities of the evening. And the same should happen, you know, with your turn, which is what we were talking about.
Right. You don't want to end up with a little turn that you have to take care of after you didn't plan your turn.
Yeah, exactly. Plan for the big turns so you don't have to take care of the little turns. I think this is falling apart.
This metaphor is solid. Still solid.
Solid as a rock.
So new players, something that's kind of, you know, I would say a hard thing to grasp when you're first starting out is knowing what to do when and what kind of difference it makes in your turn and on your opponent's turn as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say this is something that 3 years in, I still struggle with. This is one of the biggest things because I tend to just be way too hasty, even though I know that I should be taking more care. But it's just such an automatic sort of like, okay, like untap, like, yeah, like
upkeep,
untap,
draw.
Upkeep, draw, okay, like main phase, attack, second main, let's go. Like, right? You get in the groove and you just keep rolling. You're like a train on tracks and there's not a stop. The train just goes from one ocean to the other.
Megan, no, there's somebody.
Until it plunges into the ocean on the other side of the continent.
There's an ocean.
That is how trains work.
As far as I'm aware.
Exactly. People just jump on and off while they're already moving.
That's what the movies would have me believe.
Exactly. You can't have your turn in Magic be like a train. Because you are going to inevitably make mistakes. Or if you don't make mistakes, you might just make a series of decisions that aren't optimal, which also lead you to lose the game. You know, a lot of times it's not one big mistake that led you to lose a game. It's just a series of, like, less than optimal decisions that you made that kind of, you know, tumbled into a mistake.
It's like when you wake up and you're, you know, 50 years old and you're working, you know, for a bank and you're still middle manager. You're like, what series of decisions in my life led up to me being a sad, sad man right now?
Exactly.
If you're a happy bank middle manager, great job. I'm specifically talking about sad middle managers.
Yeah. If your goal was middle management, then that, like, it's like you won your game of Magic.
Yep.
That was your goal and you won it.
So when you're thinking about planning out your turn, that means a lot of different things, right? It can mean something like managing your mana effectively.
Absolutely. It can, I feel like a lot of the time for me, that is what it means.
Yeah.
It's just sort of leaving, you know, deciding what spells I'm going to cast and making sure that I tap appropriately so that I'm not, you know, tapping mana willy-nilly over here, loosey-goosey.
Like leaving the incorrect colors up.
Exactly. I'm like a big skirt in a big breeze. Everything's just gonna go everywhere. Okay, I can't do it. You know, you don't want that. You don't want that in your turn of Magic.
No.
You know, we're not all the Marilyn Monroes of our local tournament scene.
It could mean playing the appropriate creature at the appropriate time.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that I've been, what really brought this to my attention recently is that I've been playing Esper Control in Standard. And it is extremely punishing for not planning out your turn.
I can imagine.
Just because it is, I started playing back in the era of Sphinx's Revelation control. And Sphinx's Revelation gave you a lot more wiggle room to make less than optimal decisions. Because Sphinx's Revelation
just gained
was
the life back, whatever.
Was an absurd Magic card. It was so great, and especially in that deck, it could cover kind of like a suite of ills.
Side note.
Yes.
Is Siege Rhino the new Sphinx's Revelation?
Siege Rhino can go fuck itself.
Well, what's the difference? They both swing games, you know, in the opposite direction. They both are super annoying to play against. You tell me the difference.
Siege Rhino is just a stupid rhino. It's just a stupid 4/5 rhino with an enters the battlefield ability. Big whoop rhino. Big effing whoop.
I'm going to posit here that they are similar cards in that they affect the game state similarly.
What? No, they don't. Siege Rhino is just creating a threat. It's like, you're just like putting it all out there for your opponent about how you're going to win the game. It's like, how are you going to win the game? Oh, I'm going to attack you to death with this 4/5. It's like, great. How innovative of you.
Do you see with the Sphinx's similarities?
Revelation, no, Sphinx's Revelation. It's like, how are you going to win the game? Well, I haven't shown you yet, but trust me, I'm going to draw enough cards that it doesn't matter how I'm going to win.
You gain the life.
Already have won.
You gain the life. You swing the game back
Except
in your favor.
Instead of getting a stupid rhino, I get more spells.
Maybe you want a rhino as one of those spells.
No, I don't. I never want a rhino as one of those spells.
Megan, what if I gave you a rhino for Christmas?
I'd be so mad.
Hashtag get Megan rhinos for Christmas.
So, So Old Sphinx's Revelation Control was a little bit of it wasn't as punishing on people who didn't play it quite as optimally. Obviously, like, there's still a ton of room for mistakes, and there's a ton of room for like making enough mistakes that you are going to lose. But the new style of Esper control decks, since that card departed, leaves very little room for making non-optimal decisions. And so it's one of those things where I've just, every time that I lose a game or a match with that deck, I can sit there and think, yeah, I know that it was definitely something I did. And do you know what? It probably wasn't one thing that I did. It was probably six things that I did when I was casting my dig through time and I didn't make the correct decision about how many cards I'm going to leave in my graveyard for future delve spells versus how many lands I'm going to tap. Because I have to think through the sequence of, okay, what am I digging for exactly? What card?
Gold!
That's my job!
Old timey prospector, get out of here.
I'm always digging for gold.
No, you're panning for gold.
I'm doing both. Prospectors in my day and age, we don't have it easy.
Oh, God.
Anyways, you have to think about, okay, what am I looking to cast? Is it something I need to cast right now? Is it something I need to cast next turn? What game plan am I looking to further? And what card is going to help me do that? And what mana am I going to need to leave untapped? So it's almost like a backwards working sort of thing.
In Limited, we think about it, you know, in much the same way, but it's less concentrated on spells and, say, Esper Control and more concentrated on creatures.
Yeah, absolutely. Planning out your turns in the early stages of a Limited game is going to be a lot about, like, okay, how am I going to best develop my board right now?
Meaning putting down creatures.
Exactly. And so you'll want to usually adhere to the basics of, like, oh, I'm going to play a 2-drop on turn 2, a 3-drop on turn 3, maybe I'll have a 4-drop on 4, or I'll have 2 2-drops. But either way, I'm using all of my mana every turn, and I'm putting out the best, you know, the best thing that I have available with the mana that I have available.
Right. You have to also ask yourself the question, is it more important for me to play a creature that will be able to block my opponent's creatures, or is it more important for me to play something that can attack through my opponent's creatures?
Exactly. And so that's when you're thinking through not just your current turn, but you're sort of thinking, you know, two steps ahead. What am I going to do now on my opponent's turn? Am I going to block? Am I not? What am I going to do on my next turn? Am I hoping to attack next on my next turn? Or am I just looking to get to my next turn with my life total at about the same place where it is right now?
And I think knowing the phases of a turn is something that's really helpful for dealing with planning your turn out correctly. We were helping a newer player tonight play a game of Magic, and he said to us, I wouldn't have thought to have declared my attackers and attacked, and then cast my Stone Fury, as opposed to casting my Stone Fury main phase and then attacking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that sort of also leads into the bigger picture of, like, what's my game plan? Because in that instance, we were on the offensive a lot in that game. And it was providing our opponent with an opportunity to block incorrectly. Like, maybe they're going to chump block because then we can decide which of these two creatures to Stone Fury, which is what was going on. We had an 8-9 Devastator and they had a 2-3 and a 4-5. And it's like, oh, he's like, you know, we can Stone Fury this 4-5 and we'll get in for a lot of trample with the Devastator. And it's like, well, they might make a different decision about how they're going to block if they know that they don't have that 4-5. So instead, let's not give them that information. Let's make our attack, and then we can make a decision about how we're going to use this card on the other side of that.
And I think withholding information from your opponent is something that's huge in planning your turn, right? And that's why people choose to play creatures a lot of the time after their attack phase and their second main phase. That way they can leave their mana open during their attack phase for a potential trick, even if you're not holding one. Maybe you have it, maybe you don't. Your opponent does not know. But if you play your creature second main, that gives your opponent less information. It also gives them less information if you play your land in your second main phase. But that gets to be a little tricky too, because you need to remember that you did not play your land previously, and it will take a mana away from any instant effects you might want during your combat phase.
Exactly. Remember, you always want to be like the American government, withholding information
for as long as possible.
Hashtag, it's always an inside job.
Hashtag, Rhino present Megan Christmas. Is that what I said before?
So anyways, I would say when it boils down to it, like we mentioned, in Limited, a lot of times, especially in the early game, it's going to be about developing your board, because in Limited, it's usually going to be about, you know, you're going to win by getting your opponent to zero.
Yeah.
So you need to start developing some pressure early on. And I think that BFZ is, or Battle for Zendikar is especially, like, helpful to that mode of thinking, because there are a lot of really good ways to handle your, if you get some early pressure, there's lots of great spells that handle your opponent's maybe ways to stabilize, so that you get a little bit of early board presence, and then you can follow up with some tempo or some removal or just like a spell shrivel, and all of a sudden you're so far ahead in your game plan because you took a little bit of time to plan out, what am I going to do this turn? What am I going to do on my opponent's turn? Where am I looking to be at the start of my next turn?
Right. Plan your turn, you peoples.
Exactly. Just like you plan your life.
And if you don't plan your life, plan your turn like you plan your batter for cookies. You're not just going to throw anything in there. I mean, let's get real. You need the sugar. You need the chocolate chips. You need the vanilla. You're not just going to put a broccoli in a bowl and put in a pile of ice cream plus, you know, some black pepper. It's not going to happen.
Oh, no, I've had that before.
Oh, is that good?
Yeah, it was reasonable.
I think I'm going to go throw up. Mailbag.
Hey, everybody. We're going to answer a couple of questions that Maria has on this gold brick.
Check it out. If you're watching on Tulare Community College YouTube, you see my gold brick. It's beautiful.
Wonderful. So we have a couple of listener questions, which we're going to read. And then maybe we'll answer them.
Who knows?
Or maybe we'll yell, screw you!
We're crazy.
And run away.
Here's the first question from Daniel. Hey guys, you might know me on Twitter. Oh. Anyway, he put his Twitter name, but I won't read out here. But I have a serious question to ask. How do I get my parents to understand that girls play Magic, the Gathering, and play it well? It seems that every time I tell them that I played a girl at FNM, they say something to the degree of, really? Did you beat her? I'm giving his parents some crazy accent. And if/when I say no, they're usually surprised by it. I love them, and I just want them to understand that this game is accessible to everyone. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, that is one, a great question, because I feel like it definitely also comes up even just when I tell people that I play Magic.
Yeah, yep.
They're like, what? It is absolutely a conversation sometimes. And, like, I think the best thing that you can do at some point is just sit down, and it doesn't have to be, like, a long, serious conversation, but have, like, a legitimate conversation about it. Like, it's not always enough to say, hey, yes, I played a girl, and yes, she beat me. She was good.
I think, you know, just what you said in your email actually is enough to say, yeah, a lot of women play the game now.
Exactly.
And a lot are really good.
Yeah.
The end.
Exactly. Like, honestly. Yes. There was a woman who made the top eight of a pro tour. You know, there have been lots of female pros. There have been there are lots of very good competitive female pros at the moment.
You know what? You could even say, I listen to this podcast hosted by two women.
Two women. Mom and Dad, you should go listen to it. They don't have terrible, terrible, slightly dirty metaphors at the beginning of the show.
Oh, never.
Never. That's not us.
Yeah, but that's just it. It's just as simple as that. And I think that it's, you know, you don't necessarily need to be scared by thinking that change comes in grand speeches and big sermons on the mount, right? It can come from little moments just saying, oh, No, I got beat by a girl because there's a lot of really good girl players. It's the same as being beat by a guy.
And I would say, like, if it's something that particularly concerns you or you feel like it's still an issue, whether it's your parents, whether it's a friend, just anyone you're trying to, you know, convey to them. I want to honestly represent the breadth of the magic community, because it's really lovely and it's really wonderful. And it's one of the things that I love about it is that there are all types of players. You can even just let them know, like, hey, yes, there are good women players. And also, like, it's kind of problematic for Magic that it still has this stigma of being a game that only men play. So, like, I would just like you to very sincerely know that that's not the case. And it's like it's troubling to me that you think that. And I hope that you take what I'm saying seriously. So sometimes when shit needs to be serious about it.
And sometimes you just be like, yeah, I got beat by a girl. She was awesome.
Exactly.
The end.
And then high five.
And then high five your parents.
Both of them.
Here's the next question. This is from Jason Likes Candy.
Okay.
Hey, Eminem. Longtime listener, first time not caller because long distance calls are expensive. Also, this was an email, Jason. Come on. When you sit down to do a draft.
Looks like you said not caller.
Oh, I get it. Do you have a specific color in mind that you want to force or prefer? Secondly, when you sit down to draft a bag of Skittles, do you have a specific color in mind that you want to force or prefer?
To the first question, it depends on the format. And to the second question, it depends on which flavor variation of Skittles we're talking about.
Yeah, are we talking about tropical?
Like tropical? Blenders?
I can't remember the last time I had tropical Skittles. It must be like 15 years.
What? It can't be that long.
Are you kidding me? When was the last time you ate a tropical Skittles?
You know, I bet it was in the last 6.
Whoa, it's years. Been a long time for me on those tropical Skittles.
That's fair enough.
Here's to the strength of Skittles, though. I still remember what those taste like.
Yeah, they're very distinct.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So, like, in a traditional bag of Skittles, red. And also, I am one of the people who's like, I'm so perturbed by green apple Skittles.
Really?
I find it really trouble. Like, it's so problematic.
I'm sorry you feel that way. I mean, I don't have any, you know, I don't know. I don't hate the green apple Skittles.
You don't?
No. I'm going to answer the question and say it depends on the format. Some formats like this one, I'm looking to not draft green. And other formats like M15, I was looking to draft white.
Yeah.
But normally I'm kind of the sort of player that chases the big, exciting creatures. So if I can first pick a card that I think is really exciting and really cool, I might try and force that card. If it's like something like in this current format, black, white sort of life gain, life drain sort of deal, I might try and force that because it's a fun archetype, but I'm only going to lightly force it, right? If it's not coming to me, I'm just going to abandon it because I would rather play with a deck than no deck at all. So
yeah, absolutely. I would
prefer to read a signal.
I would say I also don't really ever go in with a plan for I want to force this if it's a draft that I'm looking to win. Obviously, if you're drafting for fun, sometimes you do crazy random things. Or maybe, you know, it's very early on in the format and people haven't really solved the archetypes yet, or solved the color pairings or the decks or the, you know, the draft deck types yet. And you're still kind of in the exploration process of like what works, what doesn't work. I don't know. It's, you know, it's similar to the first time that you ever, you know, put on a pair of socks. There's an exploration process that goes on of like, you know, like which, like where do my toes go?
What?
Like which side of the sock goes up? How high do I pull them? So there's that kind of process. But I would say like if I'm going into a draft that I want to win, like Maria said, I know the signals, but I also know in the format what deck types are strongest. Which ones are strongest for me, and if there's any colors that I really want to stay away from.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit, at least for us, when we're being competitive, it's a little bit more about just like knowing the environment as opposed to forcing something.
Yep. Somebody else asked us about magic art depicting women.
Wait, you didn't answer the Skittles question.
Oh, I'm going to draft rainbow, 5-color, brown town.
Even the green apple ones?
Yes, I put one of every color in my hand. And then I put it in my mouth.
Well,
taste a rainbow.
We might as well call original Skittles Battle for Zendikar Skittles because I'm avoiding green.
How long were you holding on to that one?
I just thought of it. But, like, let's be clear. I'm feeling really smug right now.
That was
I'm
good.
I'm really smug.
That was good. I'll give you that. Megan wins joke of the episode. So far. somebody else asked us about art and cards. Art on cards. And specifically art depicting women.
Yeah.
And do we think it's gotten better over the years? So we've only been playing for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I can tell, looking back at old sets, yes, it has gotten much better.
The answer is a definitive yes.
Yes. And even in Battle for Zendikar, I look at these cards and I'm happy, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, look, she is wearing something that, you know, some of them
practical
as hell. Practical. Some of it might be a little sexy or whatever, but
exactly.
It's fine. I mean,
we have no that terrible woman in Jurassic World instances of high heels where they do not belong.
She is running in high heels that entire movie.
It's the worst.
It's just...
I'm so mad.
It's never going to happen.
She really rocks that haircut, though.
I don't care. All I can care... All I thought about that entire movie was, oh my God, you're in 4-inch heels. You're going to die.
Take off those shoes.
You're
going
to break your neck. Just
also,
run in your bare feet.
Also, why are you...
There's a dinosaur.
Why are you, in theory, in charge of this park, but people constantly tell you what to do?
Oh, so terrible.
It was very bad. Moving
anyway,
on.
Anyway. Anyway, yeah. Yes. To answer your question, yes, it's got a lot better.
Exactly.
Of course, it's not perfect. There's exceptions.
There always are. But I look overall, at like the art on like Tajuru War Collar.
Yep.
Awesome.
I know.
So baller.
And even just we were talking about this the other day, like the art on Plummet.
Yeah.
And she's wearing like a really cool outfit that was recently cosplayed.
I don't know that we necessarily determined that it was a guy or a girl in Plummet.
It is. It's a girl.
Are you sure?
I'm like 99.9%.
You can't. You only see the back.
I'm just pretty sure.
I mean, fair enough.
And we mentioned that she had a nice butt, which is true.
Like not. It was
but
like muscular.
It's muscular, and it was in pants.
I feel like we've talked about it way too much.
Okay,
now.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to think of other
and
examples.
It was in pants. Win for women everywhere. That girl was wearing pants.
I mean,
Her butt was covered. We're doing good.
There's
no,
a card
no,
like
I totally get what you're saying.
Like even Drana's emissary, right?
Yeah, totally.
Is another great example.
Yeah, it's a very cool looking card.
I think Elspeth has been a great example for a long time.
Heck yes.
You know, like
get all up in that armor.
I thought about Bloodbond Vampire in this set a lot.
Yeah.
And she has a kind of a sexy little cutout in her shirt.
Yeah,
but I'm like,
but she's a vampire.
That's fine.
Vampires do that. Exactly.
It's not overly exploitive. Like, I would expect a vampire to wear skin-tight leather with a little cutout. I'm not going to lose my mind over it.
Exactly. We all know what, like, vampires, they're either edgy,
yep.
They're chic, and they don't really care about cutouts on their clothing.
Serene Stewart, great.
Yes. Oh, I love Serene Stewart, actually, now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That card has really, really nice looking art.
So I don't know if we talk about it enough on the show, but kudos to the art direction depicting women in Magic.
Absolutely.
They look like badass brawlers who are dressed appropriately for killing dudes. Slash Eldrazi.
Which isn't to say that it's perfect. Like when Kiora came out in the most recent iteration, right? There's always room for growth because you look at that and it's just like, I get that she's a merfolk, but if you look at the dude, like merfolk lords, like they don't dress like that.
It is true that the first Kiora's
merfolk
boobs
were
bigger than her head.
Double standard. But yeah, they totally were.
They actually were. And we talked about that on the show, I think. But I feel like people let wizards know that. And in the new iteration, I think she was more appropriately proportioned. But
exactly. Well, I heard that she was having trouble with her back, so.
Yeah, like it would have just cracked or something.
Yeah. I was just having back troubles. That's a legitimate thing.
So one last thing is an email that we got from a listener who wanted to tell us a story about his youngest daughter who was watching, I think, her older siblings play some Magic.
Yes, 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 yes.
And she said she referred to Full Art Lands.
Wait, can you do you have the email up?
Oh, God.
Just like the little exchange because it's adorable.
I'm going to have to try and search for it because I couldn't find it just looking through.
Oh, I think it's in replied to.
Oh, okay. I can look there too. Great idea. Okay, 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 okay. All right. I'm a dad of 4 kids, 2 boys and 2 girls, and a longtime Magic player. I play Magic with the boys, ages 15 and 10, and I've tried to get the girls to play, but they aren't interested. So my daughter is watching.
They'll get there. I mean, they're younger. They'll get there.
They'll get there. So my daughter is watching the boys sorting out their new BFC cards, and she says, "What are the Flirtlands?" They don't know what she's talking about. Chelsea clarifies with, "You guys keep talking about getting Flirtlands in your new packs." My son pauses and says, "Do you mean full artlands?" True story. Couldn't make this stuff up. From Dan.
That's an amazing story.
Flirtlands.
Flirtlands.
So cute.
So we would like for everybody from now on to please begin referring to full artlands as Flirtlands.
Spoiler alert! Hey everybody, Oath of the Gatewatch is coming out in January.
Yeah, exactly. We are getting super pumped, as I'm sure you are as well. But it's pretty early to be too pumped, because usually we don't have spoilers, unless they're super spoiled spoilers.
Yeah, I've been sitting here pumping iron, you know, for the past week. That's how pumped I am.
I thought you were going to say, like, right now. And I was like, Maria, now that we have video, you can't can lie about lying. Shit like this anymore. You can't lie about what you are and are not
Megan,
doing.
I have literally never lied recording. On this show ever in my life about anything I've ever said.
All right. I wonder how many episodes I would have to go back to, like, immediately disprove that statement.
One.
Yeah, one.
Zero.
Could go listen to our last episode. And find an instance.
But yeah, sometimes cards get leaked really early, mm-hmm. and it's legitimate, and sometimes they get leaked really early and they're total fakey McFakertons.
Exactly. There was last time around, there was when Eugene, there was a fake Eugene
spoiler.
Yeah,
there was a fake Eugene.
It looked pretty terrible. Everyone was quite glad that it was not the real Eugene.
Yeah, it turns out the real Eugene was more powerful, I believe, than the fake Eugene.
It certainly interesting. Was. And just a you know, a better designed card.
So now hot off the spoiler presses is something that everybody's talking about, and it was the spoiled quote-unquote question mark.
Spoiler, read all about it.
Kozilek.
That's right. Kozilek the Great Distortion.
I think that's a great name.
Yeah, it's a very nice, just like, you know, how The Ceaseless Hunger is a great follow-up to The Infinite Euro.
Yeah.
I think The Great Distortion is a great follow-up to Butcher of Truth.
I agree.
Right? There's a lot of deception going on there.
So the reason this is causing such a splash, other than it's a mythic rare that's pretty sweet, is some of the strange thing this card is doing. Megan,
absolutely.
Read this, mother.
Kozilek the Great Distortion, 8... Weird diamond. That's the only way I can describe it. It doesn't have a color.
We'll get back to that.
It's just a weird diamond. Legendary creature Eldrazi, 12/12. When you cast Kozilek the Great Distortion, if you have fewer than 7 cards in hand, draw cards equal to the difference. So you get to get a full grip, as they say, again. Menace.
I wish I could get a full grip.
Like on reality.
On reality.
Shaky at best.
Yeah.
Menace, not as sweet as Indestructible.
No.
But discard a card with converted mana cost X. Counter target spell with converted mana cost X.
Interesting.
A void as cryptic as reality itself.
I think that's flavor text sounds legit.
That does sound legit. And, you know, like Ulamog, it has a when you cast this trigger, right? Because Ulamog doesn't need to enter the battlefield. It could get countered. It still gets to exile 2 things.
Yeah.
Kozilek, it could get countered. You still get to draw up to 7 cards again.
Nice.
Ulamog has Indestructible. Kozilek has Menace.
Which I think
is a downgrade.
Is the weirdest part of the card
it's
for
a
me.
A downgrade, but, you know, it is a little weird. But it means that, you know, if you're going to chump it, you have to double chump.
True.
And then the final one, you know, Ulamog has his, you know, crazy mill 20 cards. Or exile 20 cards, yeah. Not even milled. Straight exile 20 cards. This has discard to counter, and you know you're going to have a full grip of spells.
So you're protecting Kozilek.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just the game.
Or the game.
Your
don't do
dominance,
anything.
Your new dominance for the game. It also makes me wonder, so you know how Ulamog's ability with exiling the top 20 cards kind of mimics in a really big way Ingesters.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's going to be, I wonder if we're going to see something along the lines of like discarding. Like, I wonder if discard is going to somehow be a key part of Kozilek's brood. If we could have something along the lines of madness again.
Interesting.
Because, you know, madness was, there were
from
spells.
From Innistrad?
No, it was, it's older than that.
Oh, okay.
Madness was, a card would have its regular converted mana cost and then would have a madness cost where if you were, which was usually way cheaper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you were going to discard that card, you could pay the madness, which was way cheaper, and cast the spell for that cost instead. But it also meant that you had to have discard outlets.
You know what would be interesting?
So I wonder if it could be something along those lines.
What if it was discarding lands, because that's what the Eldrazi are doing. They're just
destroying everything.
Yeah, that's true.
They just, so I feel like I don't know. Could be a thing.
Listeners, remember to remind us, or wait, you remind us if we're right.
Remember to remind us. Listeners, remember to remind us if we're right. Hey, doll.
So the other interesting thing about this card is in its mana cost.
Yeah. It has weird diamond.
Diamond.
And they're colorless.
Mm-hmm.
And so this Kozilek was spoiled with a land called Wastes. It's a basic land, but no other.
Nothing.
It's not a forest. It's not a mountain. No. It's not a plains. It's just a basic land.
Wastes. And it has a little diamond down where his forest,
it really,
or,
does,
you know, fireball would be.
And it's called Wastes.
So
it's pretty cool looking.
It looks like it just produces waste mana,
which is colorless.
Colorless.
It just produces a colorless mana. But something like Kozilek has these two colorless specific costs in it. So you can't play, you can't pay that colorless with like a blue mana and a red mana, right? Because when you tap an island, it makes blue no matter what. You can't be like, this blue is actually colorless. No, it's a blue mana.
Yep.
You can usually use it to pay for colorless. But in this case, you can't. Only colorless can pay for colorless.
Yeah, there's a difference between, what is it, colorless mana,
mm-hmm,
and mana that...
That can be paid with any color.
Paid with any color.
Yeah.
So that's the distinction you need to make. And yeah, so this is exciting.
Very cool.
It's a different kind of, I mean, I kind of hope it's real because I think it's really neat.
Absolutely.
Commander players are probably very happy to see this.
Yes, because they've really been wanting to have colorless land so that they can have colorless commanders.
Yep. And it's a different kind of land that, you know, some people are saying is this Barry's land, which Mark Rosewater has been talking about designing for a long time. And it's not exactly that. But it's a new kind of land for Magic, and anything that's new and different and innovative, I'm all about. So I want to get on board the waste train.
That's the worst train.
Things I never thought I'd say.
Wait, it smells.
Megan?
There's no good seats. There is no good seat on the waste train.
If I rolled up into a college town and I had something called the waste train, wouldn't everybody get on that?
No, because you called it the waste train and not the wasted train. There's a really important distinction. Like my trash can, if I were in the UK, wouldn't be a wasted bin. It's just a waste.
I don't know.
It's not a drunk trash can. It's just a trash can.
When I lived in England, my trash bin was definitely my wasted bin. That's where I barfed, what I'm trying to say.
I got there.
There was one other card that showed up in the spoilers as well recently.
Mirror Pool. It is also a land. No other type, just land.
Yep.
Mirror Pool enters the battlefield tapped. It's a mythic, by the way. Tap, add weird diamond colorless to your mana pool.
Waste.
Yeah, add waste to your mana pool.
Sounds weird.
Two in a waste. Tap. Sacrifice Mirror Pool. Copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy.
Sure.
Four in waste. Tap. Sacrifice Mirror Pool. Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature you control.
I put waste into my mana pool most mornings. Okay, I just had to get it out there. It was going to happen.
No.
People are going to make a poop joke with this waste mana. They had to know that.
I mean, they probably did. They probably did.
Yeah, but
so
sweet card too.
Exactly. It's anybody's guess as to whether these are real or not. But I think the consensus is trending more and more every day to these being legitimate spoilers.
Yep.
The art on them is great.
The art is fantastic. The art
looks really good. If nothing else, I've got to imagine that that art is real.
Yeah, I don't know how that could not be real.
Because it looks super cool. And Kozilek making a return.
Yeah.
You know, just when all those, MF and meddling planeswalkers thought that they had gotten Ulamog trapped.
Nope.
I would have gotten away with the destruction of Zendikar if it weren't for you meddling planeswalkers. Anyways, Kozilek comes along and, you know, he and Ulamog are going to go, you know, have a blind eternities party together.
I'm really excited to see if Emrakul comes back.
Emrakul has long been known to have left the plane of Zendikar.
Well, maybe, you know, she's hungry.
Yeah. She just wants to, she doesn't like being left out of a party.
Mm-hmm.
And she feels it's FOMO. Like where, like everyone, yeah, Emrakul has serious FOMO. You gotta talk to her about it.
Is somebody eating world somewhere without me? Oh my god.
Girl, you gotta stop worrying about this, okay? Like you are the take an extra turn. You're it.
But people are eating worlds. I feel like everybody's eating worlds and I'm not eating worlds right now.
Look, I promise the next time we're gonna go eat worlds, we'll invite you.
Oh, well, I'm worried about this time. And here I am just sitting on my couch watching reruns of Dexter.
Look, Emmy, that sounds like a
terrible day. It's the last season. It sucks.
Look, but I feel like there's some changes you need to make in your life. That I can't necessarily help you with.
FOMO. Emrakul is really whiny.
I know. Wow.
She just wants to eat some more worlds.
I know. She really does. And I get it. We all have FOMO sometimes.
We all watched Dexter for a while and then it got really bad.
I didn't ever, but.
I mean, the first two seasons on point.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're really good. I think the third season.
I believe that. I remember when it first came out. Yeah. People were like, yeah.
It was excellent. Fair enough. Then it jumped the shark.
So, from that episode of Happy Days when Fonzie actually jumped a shark.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, in the future, kids are going to say that and they'll have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah, they'll have no idea. They'll just be like, yeah, you know that phrase that means that it went off the deep end.
It's just
but
like.
But they won't have pools anymore either, so they won't know what it means to go off the deep end.
I say things like tape, like I'm going to tape this.
Oh, yeah.
It means nothing.
No. I mean, unless you have some scotch tape and it's an envelope.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
We're a gift.
Thank you so much for tuning in for yet another episode of Magic the Amateuring. We hope that you learned a little bit more about taking your time when you're taking your turn.
Yeah.
Planning out the steps. What you're going to do. What you going to do
when
your turn
for you.
Comes for you.
So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled for more spoilers coming up from Oath of the Gatewatch. It's a little early, as we said, but we're going to keep on top of those for you.
In the next month, they'll really start, you know, they'll start trickling in.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, we read some mailbag. And if you have a question, a comment, we always love to hear from people. So please send us an email at magicktheamateuring@gmail.com.
And magicktheamateuring.com is just our website.
That's just our website. You can visit it.
Yeah, it's a very welcoming place.
You can also
place.
Submit a question via the website.
Yeah, you can.
Or you can just email us. It's totally up to you.
Something cool about our website, too, is if you are somebody who likes to kind of like look at your phone or watch your computer during lunch breaks, is Megan's been doing some Battle for Zendikar draft videos recently and just been crushing it. And you can go to our website. We have a special section for videos. You can also go to our YouTube channel. Just search for Magic the Amateuring on YouTube and watch some of those sweet draft videos.
Absolutely. One is mediocre. Wait, what's the most recent one that's up? Is it 3?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 2 I really loved, and then 3 is also good. But you can skip one.
Okay. Yeah, but check those out. And follow us on Twitter at MTAcast. We love having new Twitter followers in the family, and that's where we communicate with listeners most often. So if you have a question,
absolutely,
it's the best place to get in touch with us. But if you have a lengthier question, something you want read on the show, perhaps, our email address is the best place for that. As we mentioned before, go to YouTube. You can watch our video along with this podcast if you want to see our smiling faces.
or frowning faces.
And the professor's YouTube channel to learn community college. And also support us on Patreon. We would love to have you join the Patreon family if the show is something you value every week. It's certainly something Megan and I value, and we want to continue to bring it to you and sort of just up the production quality as we continue. And that's something we're trying to do now with our videos. We're trying to give you something, a little added bonus.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You're like, it felt like something profound. You're going to say something profound, but then it just stopped.
Also, everybody, if you live in the United States and you happen to be in one of the states that will be accepting Syrian refugees, there are actually lots of, inside of those states, there's lots of programs going on now with donation drives, or they need mentors for refugees, which I really highly recommend checking it out, donating money or clothing or other needed items if you're able, or if you have the time and are able to help someone with job applications or with learning the bus system in the new city, helping them get around to go get groceries or something once a week. They're really great programs, and considering the scope of the current global climate, if you're looking to do something that can help out people who are really in need of a little bit of help, that's just something that you're able to do that I was recently made aware of. And I'm looking into the one in Minneapolis, and it's really great to see all the things that people are doing to help.
Yeah, Minnesota is a state that's welcoming.
Absolutely.
So that's very good. And your state might not be, but there's still a lot of things you can do otherwise.
Absolutely. So that's just dropping a little realness on you at the very end there.
You didn't think it was coming, but there it is. Boom.
There it is.
You got it.
It's just like a ferret that you got when you were a kid, and then you lost it, and you assumed that it had died, and then one day you're moving away to college,
and boom,
there that fucking ferret is.
There it is.
It runs out of a hole in the wall, and it turns out that it started a ferret colony in the wall.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
What if that was a thing that happened? That'd be the weirdest.
Have you seen the show Red Dwarf?
No.
Well, it was a show that some may call good and many Americans would call terrible. British show. And I've seen a lot of it. And what happened is a cat gets... it's a long story, but
It's
on a spaceship in space in the future. Okay. And it gets locked. You know, there was a cryo chamber. Everyone on the ship died except for one person. And then this cat had enough time to... it survived. And it propagated and evolved into a weird human/cat person.
Creepy.
So what I'm saying is... it's happened, at least on TV.
At least on television. We all know the things that happen on television are quite real.
Yeah. Anyway, so long for this week, everybody. Good luck. High five out there. And zip up those parkas. It's getting cold out.
Pointing at you.